This is Phil Lamar, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hi, this is John Barber from IDW Publishing. You are listening to The Pull Bag.
You've just jumped inside The Pull Bag. Join TFG1 Mike and the rest of the comic crew here at the GCRN as they make their great escape into comics. From DC, Marvel, and Image to IDW, Boom Studios, and Zenoscope, we have everything right here. We cover things like Transformers, He-Man, superheroes, TMNT, and Radiant Black. Yeah, we have all that and so much more. It's all inside The Pull Bag here on the Geekcast Radio Network. So, without further ado, it's time to talk about the comics we're reading right now, here inside The Pull Bag.
Hello and welcome to The Pull Bag. This is episode 515. I'm, of course, TFG1 Mike, and joining me this time around for his origins in comic reading is Brad Falicki. Hello, sir.
Hey, happy to be here. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you, good, sir?
I'm hanging in. I'm pretty good.
That's good. Brad is 1/8, 1/9, 1/10. I don't know how many hosts are on the Dark Knight News podcast, but he's one of them. Every time I listen, I'm like, okay, I'm looking at the description, and I'm like, okay, there's like three hosts listed. Listen to the show. It's like seven people.
Yeah, we go back and forth. We get a lot of people on there. Steve, me, Kendra.
Hales, Kendra.
And then sometimes the owner of the site, Damien, has been coming on more frequently. So, yeah, we got – and Seth, so and Kelly. So, yeah, we got a lot of people coming in and to join us.
Two or three, folks. Two or three is the magic number for podcast hosts. Sometimes four if you have a good enough, you know, ranch wrangler. You got a cowboy in there that can throw some rope over some people. That's fine. But anything more than five is way too many.
Yeah. Very rarely do five of us get on there at one time. So, yeah, you're probably right on that one.
Boy, yeah, we've wrangled some stuff over here sometimes. And yikes, it's work. It's a juggling act. So we are here to talk about, as I said, Brad's origins in reading comics and all that good stuff. So did you remember, or not did, wow, that's not even the right fucking question.
Ooh, technical difficulties. Let's move on, shall we?
All right, kicking off the questions, did you grow up reading comics, and at what age do you first remember reading or noticing comics?
So it would have been in 1982. And I would have been at that point 8 years old. So I think that, yeah, you could consider it growing up in comics. What led me to discover comics, and, you know, I come back to this one moment in my life that changed the direction that seems so, so unimportant at the time, but turned out not to be the case, is I was in second grade. It was in the fall, running in recess, and I happened to just look down at the right time and notice that somebody had dropped a G.I. Joe action figure on the ground. Something just came over me that I picked it up, and I remember after recess, we got to watch a video. I don't remember what the video was, but I remember having this figure in my pocket and just kind of on a whim deciding, okay, I'm going to start collecting these G.I. Joe toys now. And, a few months later, I was into it, got some of the action figures, and I was in our local pharmacy. I grew up in a small town in Ohio. We had kind of a mom-and-pop pharmacy there that had, you know, those days had the pole, the spinner rack, I mean. And I happened to glance over, was looking at it, and there was a G.I. Joe comic. And I thought, wow, what's this about? And it was issue 10. And in that issue, I think Scarlet and maybe Zap and Snake Eyes end up in the Cobra town of Springfield. And I believe they get captured and they're given hallucinogenic drugs. And I had no idea what was going on. I was 8 years old. Yeah. But it definitely left an impression. And to this day, Larry Hama's run on G.I. Joe is still one of my favorites in all the comics. And, you know, I that was my intro. And then there was another store in town. It was kind of like a convenience store called Lawson's, and they sold comic books in there too. And I was in there one day with my dad, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to check out something beyond the G.I. Joe comic. And I got an issue with Spider-Man. And that kind of started me off. And then I was sick at home with the flu around that time as well. And I'm the baby in the family, so all my siblings are a lot older than I am. But my sister was out, and she brought home a bunch of comics for me to read while I was, you know, sick in bed. And I can't remember every issue that was in that stack, but I know there was a few issues of ROM Space Knight that I really liked. I remember the concept of the Dire Race really freaked me out. And that to this day remains kind of my holy grail of something I want republished, is the Marvel ROM Space Knight comics. Because from what I understand, there's a lot going on with the rights to that particular character. So yeah. Marvel can't really do anything with that series, and that's a shame, because I'd really love to reread that again in like a trade paperback.
I'm surprised. I'm surprised IDW didn't get the rights to reprint that from Marvel, because they reprint all the TMNT stuff. They did a ROM Space Knight. I don't know if it was an update or something, but I remember a couple of years ago when Hasbro still wanted to create their shared universe at the time, there was a ROM Space Knight one shot. It wasn't what you're talking about, but like, I remember seeing ROM in comics in the modern day. And my thinking is, why doesn't IDW have the rights to that, to reprint those? That's weird.
Yeah, and the Space Knights are still part of the broader Marvel universe. I mean, they were just in, I want to say, Empire maybe, or one of those crossover events. Space Knights played a part, and I remember thinking, oh, that's cool. Space Knights are still around. But yeah, man, I really would love to see IDW or somebody republish those Marvel issues, because I really want to reread those. But yeah, and then, you know, I you know, back to the how did I start reading, and that just kind of got me going. You know, that just kind of got me reading, and that's with a very important time in comics at a very formative age, because that's when comics as a medium kind of, as they say, grew up, because that's when Frank Miller started getting big in Dark Knight Returns and a few years later Watchmen and things like that. So as I was growing up and learning more about the world, comics were very interesting window, because they were also kind of growing up as a medium. So it was a very cool time to be into comics, you know, I think. And I'm very glad for that. I kind of think like that's what it would be like if you were, I mean, if you were 8 years old and into music in 1968, when or, you know, when the Beatles first came out or something like that, when rock music really grew up, you know, it was been kind of the same effect. But that was a very important time in comics that I'm very honored to have taken, you know, taken a part in when it was actually happening.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. So you basically just found it on your own. There wasn't like a parent or a friend or someone who just said, here, kid, read this comic. Go away. You bother me.
No. In fact, I think I got people into comics. I remember my best friend at the time, I got him into it, and we would, you know, that store that I was the convenience store that I was mentioning, we would go there every Wednesday, and the ladies who worked there, they knew us, so we would quote unquote hide issues around the store so nobody else would buy them. But we were, you know, realistically, we were probably the only ones buying the comics, so they just let us do it, you know, the ones that we wanted we couldn't buy at the time and things like that. So it was kind of like that was our thing to do. And then you know, my sister, you know, I'm from Ohio, about 60 miles south of Cleveland, but my sister ended up moving to Cleveland. And when I would go and visit her on the weekends, there was a comic shop. And that was the only, at that point in time, comic shops were kind of rare. At that point, for all I knew, that was the only comic store in the entire state of Ohio.
Right,
it probably wasn't. But, you know, sometimes my friend would go with me. And at that time, when you would go to a comic shop, you would the comics were almost a month ahead of what they were in the pharmacies and convenience stores and things like that. So you got in like you felt like you were participating in something really special because you got these issues when they were kind of new, newer than you realized. So that was always fun. I just kind of miss the fact that the spinner rack doesn't really exist anymore in normal stores. You generally have to find a comic shop to find comic books, and that's kind of sad.
It is kind of sad, but it's like, at least you'd be supporting a small business kind of I know there are big comic book stores out there like Midtown or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I know there are huge conglomerate comic stores, but there's nothing like finding that one shop which is like a complete hole in the wall and is very eclectic, but still has everything that you want it to have as far as books go.
See, and this is the problem. Like I said, I live in New Jersey, kind of right outside of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So I have access to things like Midtown Comics, for instance. And yeah, it's kind of a bigger conglomerate. But the one good thing about a place like Midtown Comics is they have everything. Every True. Book that comes out every week, you know it's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a mom and pop shop that I go to in New Jersey, and that's not always the case. So I go back and forth. I love supporting the smaller stores, but I like to be guaranteed that it's going to be there when I go in. So I kind of go back and forth, but I definitely agree that it's good to support the small business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I swear, I wrote this question back in 2013 before I even met Ed Kender or anybody else. So I'm not stealing a play out of your playbook here. DC or Marvel?
You know, I'm not just saying this to be diplomatic, but I do go back and forth. I really do.
Everybody says that because it's about characters. It's not about the companies.
Right.
I have zero loyalty to eat. Like, I'm not picking one or the other.
You know, and I've said this on the DC News podcast too. I said, you know, you're going to be very hard pressed to find a comic book fan out there that only buys Marvel or only buys DC. I don't think you're going to see that now, which I think is healthy. But you know, when I first got into comics, I was definitely a Marvel guy. You know, because you know the Marvel's concept of the world outside your window really appealed to me, and I'm a pretty short guy, so I could always relate to Wolverine being short and cranky. I could relate to Peter Parker, you know, just getting beaten down by life and just having the same struggles that most teenagers have, especially teenagers that read comics, you know, or people that read comics. Mm-hmm. So I think Marvel was my go-to at first. And plus, when I got collecting at 82, thinking about this is really makes me feel old, because the Marvel universe at that point was only 20 years old. That's not that big. I mean, so that continuity was a lot easier to keep contained, and I like that idea. But you go to the DC characters, and not only some of them hard. I could not relate to Superman, you know, but also the characters were older, and with that comes a little, you know, a little bit of hokiness in my mind at the time.
Yeah.
But then, you know, as I was talking about the whole, you know, as the medium was growing up or whatever, most of that stuff came from the DC side of things. For, you know, those characters can really stand for big, big metaphors in ways that sometimes Marvels cannot, I think. And that's why when you start talking about superhero books that are studied in colleges, Kingdom Come comes up.
Yeah.
You know, Dark Knight Returns comes up, but you might not see Kraven the Hunter or Kraven's Last Hunt or Death of Gwen Stacy, something like that. You know, as good as those stories are, they don't have that same kind of I don't want to say scholarly or literary, but it has that kind of that ability to stand for these bigger metaphors, and a lot of writers can really use that. So that really turned me on to DC, and also around the time I think what got me into DC initially was Crisis on Infinite Earths, because I was collecting around that time, and that seemed really complex and mind blowing what they were doing with that. So that turned me onto the DC characters, but at first I was a Marvel guy. Then now I think I'm in a phase where it also kind of depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about movies, I generally tend to lean Marvel. If you're talking about the comics, I tend to lean to DC. I think that right now DC is doing some really cool things with the characters. And if I was going to have to sit down with a comic, I would choose a DC book over a Marvel book if I had to.
I mean, like, you know, you mentioned you never really could relate to Superman. And I understand that completely. But, like, who can relate to a foreign alien? Oh, sorry. but it's one of those things where we've only in a decade of this podcast, we've only ever covered Superman, I think, most recently in the last 5 years of our, like, it's just never been, like, it's not that I dislike his comics or anything. It's just I've always been Superman in movies or Superman in animation or Superman in TV or whatever kind of thing. And yeah, you're right. Generally, Marvel movies, DC comics, I've read plenty of, like, when they did Marvel Now, and see, that's the problem. Like you were mentioning earlier, you know, back in 1982, of course, I didn't know a damn thing. I was 2 years old at the time, but, you know, back in those days, like you mentioned, it was only 20 years old. Well, now it's like, what, 40, 50, 60, 70, whatever the hell it is now. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? But, like, you know, we had all this choice. And then because they're trying to chase that new number one money, it's like, DC, this is the seventh reboot in 4 years.
Yeah, that's my conundrum, too, is because I love that DC can hit the reset button on their continuity. Mm-hmm. I love that they're willing to pull that trigger. I just wish they wouldn't pull it so often. Meanwhile, I think Marvel needs to do that more often. They don't really, they never really go that route. And I think at this point they need to. The most recent Secret Wars was close, but no cigar. I think they really need to do like a rebirth situation.
Yeah. And again, like I said, for me, it isn't about either company, whether they reboot or not. For me, it's about a character. Like, specifically, I'll say Terry McGinnis Batman Beyond, or even Tim Drake Batman Beyond, when they did who did the Tim Drake Batman Beyond? Oh, we covered it. Damn it, I forget off the top of my head. Tim Seeley, I think it was at first, and then it changed. That's what it is. But anyway, like, Batman Beyond specifically, I will follow that character wherever he goes in comics, because I like that character. I like that universe. That universe doesn't necessarily need to have a reboot for it, even though going from, let's say, New 52 to Rebirth, yes, Batman Beyond Rebirth was a thing, but it had no overall, and I know they've introduced Terry into the main DCU now, and that's fine, but, like, the Batman Beyond comics have always been separate to me, even though they're still in the DC universe, because it's not something I need to read 20 years or 70 years of stuff.
I go back and forth with the concept of continuity. in a way. And I think, you know, a lot of comic readers might say the same thing. For me personally, I see it both ways. Some of the best stories are stories told outside of a basic continuity, Dark Knight Returns being an example of that. Yeah. But I like a connected continuity and story because I like that it could have bigger stakes. Like, I love when big things pay off that they've been planting in different comics over the past year or something. And an example I come back to a lot that is a series that a lot of people don't talk about anymore, but Infinite Crisis. Mm-hmm. I really like how they led that up. They had these little crumbs around in a lot of different series before it lit up, and then it all paid off. And that's a fun part of reading comics. So, you know, I think they both have their benefits. And as far as, like, I get what you're saying about following characters around, but I think for me, what I do is I would follow writers around.
I do that, you know, too.
Yeah. Like right now for me, like the two Toms, Taylor and King, mm-hmm. anything they write, I'm going to want to check out. And, you know, I've listened to your podcast. So I know you're a big Nightwing fan. And this run on Nightwing, man, has been incredible.
I have the first – I think I have the first volume of the series, the first trade. I need to catch up with it. And my buddy Steve Megatron, who co-created the GCRN with me, I mentioned this to him. I've mentioned this to other people, but I first mentioned it to him recently. And he just – like took a pause for half a beat and said, "No, you're nuts. Don't you dare." And, you know, somebody tells me, don't I dare? Well, then I'm going to dare. But at some point, and I don't know who I'm doing this with, I've mentioned it to several people, I want to go back to the beginning of Nightwing. When I say the beginning, I mean like 96 or whenever it was, like when Dick Grayson was first Nightwing. So I assume it's the 96 run. It might be before then. I forget. Mm-hmm. And I basically want to do 90 Nights of Nightwing. So you'd have one trade per podcast per day for 90 days for three months. Wow.
That's a task. I know.
It's a task and it's ambitious and it's whatever. I just like the alliteration, 90 Nights of Nightwing. That's really all the reason why I want to do it. But I also want to read the comics too. Like, it's not that I don't want to read the comics, but for me, with Nightwing, it begins with...
"Now, I love s'mores as much as the next guy, but I'm fresh out of marshmallows. What do you say we call it a night?"
DCAU and TAS, and Lauren Lester is the voice, and then it continues with him becoming Batman in Gates of Gotham. I love Gates of Gotham. That mm-hmm. was so cool. Yeah. And then it begins with Kyle Higgins' run on New 52, and I have followed Kyle since I first read that run. I followed him to Power Rangers. He's now doing Radiant Black and all the stuff with the Massiveverse over at Image. Mm-hmm. So I understand me saying all of this is to say I understand the whole thing of following writers or following creators on various things, because if you've liked what they've done before, you're going to want to see what they do next.
Yeah.
So. All right. So what other publishers do you enjoy reading?
I like Image. I think Image has really grown into something special. You know, I had waves of comic collecting. So, you know, I mentioned I started in 82 and my first wave ended. I know this year specifically. It was 1989 because I had gotten my first girlfriend. So I don't
that's
know
what the way it is, was. Folks. You get your first girlfriend, comics.
I think that's what it is. And it was like a switch going off. It's like, okay, I don't need to collect comics anymore. And it was just boom. Yep. But that was all. But it's always stayed with me. You know, then the Batman movie came out that summer as well. So I was all about Batman. I probably had 10 Batman t-shirts by the end of that summer. But so it never really left me. And then the second wave started when Image launched, because I thought this is cool to be in on the ground floor when a whole new big comics universe is starting. It would have been there like to get the first issue of Fantastic Four or, you know, the first issue of Superman or something like that.
Yeah.
So I had this thing where I would get every Image book, and that lasted for a few years. So, and that kind of petered out with whatever, all this thing that happened with the delays, and it was a mess, as we all know. But I think Image has really grown as a company. I like some stuff on Dark Horse, like Black Hammer. I think Dark Horse does some good things. Boom Studio, I've liked their Dune stuff. I think that there's a lot of value in a lot of the smaller companies up there. And I have just recently, you know, and completely on a random whim, I didn't even know you were such a Radiant Black fan until I started listening to the podcast. But before I did, I had started reading Radiant Black's. So, yeah, that's been that and Department of Truth I've been catching up on, and I'm liking them both. So I think Image has something special. I always say that if, you know, Marvel and DC are like your NBC, ABC, big network television, and HBO is like your, I'm sorry, if like Black Label is your HBO,
yeah,
then Image is like your AMC,
yep,
kind of thing. And I think that there's, I think that's a very healthy place to be, because you can, they, the stories aren't too kiddie and they can be original. You know, they, a lot of the creators, well, I think every creator has control over their characters and what they do with them. So I think Image does a lot of really cool things. Yep. And I really liked it when they would have their first volumes all at $10. So it would really be a good jumping off point to check out their series. So yeah, I like Image a
absolutely
lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Radiant Black launched a day after my birthday. I forget which year it launched off the top of my head, but literally it launched February 10th. And I'm like, you bastards, you couldn't have launched a day before, but I understand, whatever, it is what it is. I think February 10th was a Wednesday that year or whatever, obviously, because New Comic Book Day is Wednesday.
Yep.
But yeah, Kyle Higgins and Image and just everything that man does. I have not checked out Ordinary Gods yet. I need to. I have not checked out what's the other one he did recently. Oh, there was another one. But yeah, Radiant Black, I am all in on that. I'm all in on the Massive Verse. I need to catch some of the other titles. I've read the miniseries related to the Radiant so far, but I need to catch up with like with Rogue Sun and some of the
other Rogue
stuff.
Sun was fun. I did read Rogue Sun, the first volume. And the first volume of Radiant Red and the first two of Radiant Black. So that's where I am in the Massive Verse. So I'm getting there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I am current on Radiant Black. I am all the way up to issue 22. So I'm eagerly anticipating the Catalyst War coming this summer.
Yeah.
Well, because I follow Kyle on social media, he's and rightfully so, I'm not saying anything wrong with this, hello, but, you know, he's hyping up the Catalyst War with issue 25 of Radiant Black coming in, I think it's July or August, I forget which month, but yeah, no, absolutely love that book. It's very, it's it's not what you think it is, folks. We don't know what it is yet.
Yeah.
It's a joke in the in the Radiant Black Discord, the Radiant Black Podcast Discord and whatever else. It's like, we don't know what it is. He won't tell us what it is, because, you know, you think it's one thing and then it does this like whole left turn. And I was like, okay. And then they're doing, because Kyle wants to do so many of these awesome things. Like, who the hell thought a comic book would ever do a full-on Blacklight issue for number 10?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, oh, it was just so cool.
Yeah.
So fun. It's refreshing to have something like that amongst all the other comics.
Yeah, it's cool to see these creators be able to stretch their legs and really get into it. It's kind of funny because, you know, there was a, I don't know if it's still like this, but if you are a writer getting into comics, it seemed like before you would get in with your own self-created thing, and then you know you made it when you were, you know, got assigned to write Batman. Mm-hmm. And now it seems like you start with the superheroes and then you
can
go to Image, and then you can have your own, you know, imprint and things like that.
Yeah, it's kind of reversed at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, you get to cut your teeth on Batman or Nightwing or Batman Beyond, and you get to tell a story. Like, Kyle even worked on some of the Batman Beyond books that we've covered. So, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, again, great, great storytelling.
Yeah.
All right, this may or may not be a sore subject now, considering what's going on with digital comics lately, but print or digital, which one? Both, either or, and why or why not?
Oh, man, I got to stick with print. There's just nothing like having that book in your hand. I still haven't vibed with the experience of the digital comics. Now, there was that that, and I forget what they call it, but where it kind of moves with the panel, the digital comics.
The guided view, the comics.
The guided view, yes.
Yeah.
And I depending on the comic, that I actually like. I read a few Walking Dead issues, and because Walking Dead is such a cinematic comic, it was done so well that I almost felt like I was
You feel like you're in the book. Yeah.
In the book, yeah, or watching a motion comic, remember when those were around. So that experience I kind of liked, but there's still, to me, there is nothing like having that book in your hand. And going further than that, I would rather have a trade paper book in my hand than an individual issue.
Yes.
But yeah, I have to stick with print.
I have too many Funko Pops to stick with print. But audience, I'm sorry. I don't tell these stories before we start the recording, so you're going to hear this probably every episode. I started this podcast on print. I didn't want to go digital, whatever else, and a bunch of people talked me into it. A bunch of people talked up the Comixology Guided View a decade ago, and we were doing our first and only, at the time, Punisher Month, and I am sitting in my chair holding the omnibus of Welcome Back, Frank.
Yeah.
12 issues, and that's... Omnibuses, trades fine. 5-6 issue trade paperback, fine. Omnibuses that are like, 35 pounds, like the weight of a small chihuahua, like, no thank you. I fell asleep because the book got too heavy. It had nothing to do with the content of the book. The physical book got too heavy. I fell asleep. It fell out of my hand, crashed to the floor, and then like 20 minutes later, I was on Comixology.com at the time. I'm like, okay, fine. I'm signing up for this. I'm done with it.
Yeah, that would do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, those omnibuses, you definitely wouldn't want to take those out of the house.
Yeah.
And I like to – and I whenever I leave the house, if I don't have something that I can read, whether it's a book, a comic, or whatever, I get antsy. So, yeah, but I wouldn't be throwing that in my backpack, that's for sure.
No. It's like you got rocks in your pockets. Make it weight more heavy. Buckluck number one. Oh, Lord. All right. Who are some of your favorite comics writers and why? I know you mentioned the two Toms earlier, but if you want to expand on those or you want to say other people, it's fine.
Well, I'll go into my favorites during my waves of comic collecting. So the first was, like I mentioned, like Larry Hama's run on G.I. Joe. Loved Larry Hama. I remember watching the cartoon and thinking, this is so stupid compared to the comic. The comic is so much more sophisticated. Why aren't more people reading the comic? But I loved his run on G.I. Joe. I loved Chris Claremont's run on Uncanny X-Men. It's one of my favorites. And then this is where it gets a bit cliche, because I got to say my favorite three of all time are when I was a little older in college and I discovered – well – first of all, I discovered Watchmen way younger than I should have, and it was a great experience. I remember riding in the car to visit my grandma, and I got in the Watchmen out of the library. Why they would let an 11-year-old kid get Watchmen out of the library, I have no idea. But, reading it, my parents had no idea. I mean, what was going on in the story? I wasn't reading it out loud, but I was just reading it, and it came over me like, this is about something. And I didn't know what. I was too young to really grasp what it was about, but I felt this, like, this is about something. Mm-hmm. So I got to go, and then I read it. And then when I was in college, something came over me. It's like, I need to read Watchmen again. So I got to start with that way. It was Alan Moore. And then I discovered Sandman. So Neil Gaiman is huge. And I got to fill out my Trinity with Garth Ennis, because I absolutely love Preacher.
Mm-hmm.
And when I graduated college and moved out to New York, I collected a little bit, but then stopped a while. And then I, of all things, I discovered Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I worked at a music magazine for years and years, and I would always get these they would have giveaway CDs, and I would take CDs every week and go down and sell them at a record store. And I noticed that one time when I did that, they had Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 1 on DVD, for really cheap. And I thought, man, I'd heard about this show being good. Why not check it out? Which led me to get, and he's fallen certainly, but led me to be obsessed with Joss Whedon. And then it was announced that he was going to be writing Astonishing X-Men. So I picked that up, and I've always loved his run on Astonishing X-Men. And another one is Warren Ellis, who is also very problematic this time, but I loved Transmetropolitan. Some of his stuff with The Authority and Stormwatch, and some of his stuff was really good, even though he's another one that has certainly fallen.
It's always weird because I generally, out of the stuff that I like either reading or watching, if the creator has fallen from grace like these have, I can separate the content from the person and still like the content. For me, it's about the content. It isn't about the somebody says to me, oh, Chad Kroeger from Nickelback is going to do a reggae album by himself. I'm like, know about all that, but okay, fine. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care what they do in their personal life. Okay, yes, if they're monsters, if Bill Cosby's a monster, fine. That's very problematic and very horrible, and he should be in jail, all that. Still, that doesn't take away for me what Cliff Huxtable, that character, was on that show.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now. If Warren Ellis had a book come out, I would probably check it out because I thought he was that good. You know, yeah. So, you know, with that wave, that was a wave that – when did Astonishing X-Men come out? Like 2005, maybe 6? But that was that I've been collecting – ever since so that wave is still going, and with this wave now, with getting involved in the podcast, I think some of my favorite writers currently are the two Toms, Tom Taylor, Tom King, Ram V, James Tynion. Those are like the top four. And I think some of those guys, to me, they harken back to those 90s comics that I really loved. Steve J. Ray, who you had on the podcast, he turned me on to Justice League Dark. And I believe that was that Ram V at the time, or was it James Tynion? I believe it was Ram V. But I remember reading that first trade, and I felt like I was reading one of those almost like a Sandman comic from the 90s, that 90s era of DC horror. I think those are my top comic writers throughout my experience of reading comics.
Very cool, very cool. What defines a good story to you?
You know, it's a lot of different. I think using Preacher as an example, I think when I'm reading a story that things happen in the plot or the dialogue is really good in a way that makes me think, how did they think of that? That always stands out to me. And there were so many moments like that in Preacher and Sandman that kept me just coming back. I can't wait to see what this writer does next. I think that I'm really – one of the reasons why I'm a big Batman fan and a big Walking Dead fan is villains. I'm very drawn to a good villain. I think a hero is only as good as the villain he's fighting against. And nobody has a better rogues gallery in comics than Batman. Yeah. You know, to me, you're going to announce, and I know we're supposed to be talking about comics, so I'm sorry if I keep veering into movies here, but if you're going to announce who's playing Batman, I care less than who gets announced to play the villain and who the villain's going to be. I think the villain is a really good measure. I think Kirkman – I guess he could be another one of my top writers because I really did think he did a great job with Walking Dead and Invincible. But, you know, with Walking Dead, he almost created a whole like subgenre of villains. I mean, there's some villains I see and think, man, that's like a Walking Dead villain.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, that was pretty impressive. So, you know, it has to have a good antagonist. I think going back to Watchmen, if I sense that the story is really about something, even if I'm not sure at the time what it is, I think that draws me in. I think maybe certain surprises that makes me want to say, what's going to happen next? You know, I'm on the edge of my seat. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? I think that draws me in. So I think those things are the biggest that I can point out. Other than that, it might just be something that I'm not even aware of that draws me in.
That's funny you say draws you in, because that was the next question. So what defines a good story and what draws you in? So basically, you read a first number one from whatever, like, what does that number one have to keep you coming back for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, however long the thing goes?
I think it has to have good characters and a hook, like something that like I said, that makes you wants to know what's going to happen next. Yeah. And I think when it comes to a first issue, it's a lot of what happens in the plot. And maybe if the issue is left on a really clever cliffhanger, I think that helps when it comes to first issues that I really like.
Yeah.
If not a first issue example, but a first TV show example would be the first episode of The Shield spoiler alert, but first episode when you shoots the guy. I mean, I was like, oh my God, I gotta see what's happening next. You know, those. So if you can end a comic like that, then you've got me.
Yeah, absolutely. Love The Shield. Got to get back to that one. We started celebrating 20 years last year over on our other podcast, and we covered, I think, the first two seasons of the show. Oh, I love The Shield.
Yeah.
Oh, man. There ain't no FX like The Shield.
Yeah.
I don't care what came after it on FX. I know Damages. I know other things came after The Shield. But without The Shield, you wouldn't have all the stuff that the FX originals had. You wouldn't have the Americans, as much as I like the Americans.
Yeah. It was definitely groundbreaking. It doesn't get the credit it deserves because it kind of came out in the shadow of The Sopranos. But definitely.
Yeah, it came out in the shadow of The Sopranos, but you had – I mean, technically you have to pay a certain amount for the cable package that has FX. But HBO at the time was also, you know, premium – ultra premium kind of thing. And I know The Sopranos did a lot, but I'm pretty sure Tony Soprano, because he's the – obviously the criminal in that show. I'm pretty sure no cop grabbed a – bag of cocaine or weed or whatever it was from the guy from I'm pretty sure Tony wouldn't let any cop grab the bag from his balls like Vic Mackey, just ripping, like, oh God, so good. Anybody wants the Image? I know you guys are working on your own massive verse stuff, but like, if you want to 20th anniversary of The Shield, you guys want to do a comic, please put that in the comic. Everybody. That's printing money right there.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Who are some of your favorite comics artists?
Growing up, that still stick with me more than current artists is John Byrne and George Perez. I was really bummed when George Perez passed. His post-crisis work on Wonder Woman was great, just like I love John Byrne's post-work on Man of Steel and his work on Fantastic Four. Like, when I first started collecting, he was like the template that I kind of compared other artists to. I wish I was better with names. So that, like, the artist who, the Puzzle Box, Joker Puzzle Box, I think is great. I think Jock's work on One Bad Night or One Dark Night was great. I'm such a story guy that I like artists that drive the story. That's why I don't like my art super cartoony.
Right.
Like the recent Harley Quinn, I like the book, but and Batgirls, the art is just a little too cartoony. And it's not that it's not good art.
Yeah.
It's just for me, I like something a little more grounded when it comes to the art.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Steve Dillon is another one. His work on Punisher and, of course, Preacher was just mind-blowing.
Absolutely. Do you have a favorite non-superhero title?
I gotta stick. Well, I would stick with two, Preacher being the big one. Sandman, I wouldn't necessarily – I think Sandman's kind of superhero-y, so I'm not going to bring Sandman into it. But I think definitely Preacher – And probably Larry Hama's G.I. Joe would probably be my two favorite non-superhero comics. And I like a few, like some of the stuff that Jeff Lemire's done that aren't superhero, like the Essex County Trilogy was really good. And what's his name? Burke Backdurf or Durf Backdurf, the guy who did My Friend Dahmer and Trashed. He's great. So those are some of my, I think some of my favorite non superhero books. I mean, Preacher, I just can't, you know, the funny thing about Preacher is that, what I think made me such a fan is how over the top it is. Sure. But like the blasphemous stuff that didn't resonate with me as much as just the love story. And I don't really respond to love stories that much. So it's just, it always kind of intrigued me, like why I'm reacting so strongly to this love story in this book when all this other stuff is going on. But yeah, I can't tell you how much I absolutely love Preacher. And you know, people say that, you know, it could be problematic now, but I never felt, even reading it, that he wasn't poking fun at the right people. You know, yeah. he was really having things to say about power and religion and things like that, beyond saying things about, you know, Ars Face and Humperdue and things like that. You know, it all seemed to have a reason.
I've never read Preacher. I've heard nothing but good things about it. But I will say, and I say this in every podcast, so listeners, I'm sorry. I don't believe anything was meant to hold up to whenever today is. Like, it's not supposed to. You're supposed to look at it in the time that it was made. Like, again, I will reference The Cosby Show. Yes, the man himself is a monster, but that show taught me how to trick or treat. That show taught me to be slightly less afraid of the dentist. That show, you know what I mean? Like, you're supposed to look at it in the time that it was made. And when was that made? The mid-90s, early 90s, whenever it was. And the 90s were about on par with what I know about Preacher. Like, I mean, you got gangster rap on the left and surf culture on the right and everything else in the middle. Like,
yep, exactly.
Oh, boy. What is, so when I say this, like, take a specific character or title or what, like, Batman 1940 to 2011 or whatever else. So when I say this, think of a series. Like, what is your favorite run or story arc of a series?
I really love the Mutant Massacre X-Men kind of side series. I love that. You know, Jason Aaron's run on Thor was, I think, one of the best run on superhero comics. And it's certainly bigger than an arc, even though I, you know, with War of the Realms, I think it was kind of an anticlimactic ending. But the lead up, Jason Aaron's run on Thor was just incredible. And I was never even that much of a Thor fan until I read that. So I really loved that run. Season of Mist and Sandman was great. I loved Civil War. The original Marvel Civil War series was really great.
It was so great it needed a sequel.
Yep. Yeah, which was not so great.
I don't think anyone has ever said anything nice about Civil War II.
Yeah. I mean, you just one of the reasons is that you were never going to be as good as the first.
True.
Which also actually brings me, another one of my favorite writers is Mark Millar. And as far as artist goes, having a little bit of a brain fart, but the artist for the Civil War series, I loved. That picture of Peter Parker taking his mask off in front of everybody was it should be more iconic than it is. But that's another one of my favorites. Crisis on Infinite Earths was incredible. Batman Year One. Yeah, I mean, I think that's another one of my favorites would be the arc of the Governor arc in Walking Dead. Was one of my favorites too. Thinking about it.
Very cool. What is one comic you can read over and over again, single issue or trade?
I always come back to two. X-Men issue 211. I wore that issue out. That was the start of the Mutant Massacre. That was where the Marauders were introduced. Mm-hmm. And that crazy scene where after Nightcrawler gets injured really bad by Riptide, Colossus grabs him by the neck and breaks his neck and says to Harpoon, "Harpoon, make peace with your gods, little man, you're next." And just that whole, I mean, that issue just, I could, to this day, I mean, granted I was young when that came out, but I could reread that issue today. In fact, a few years ago, they had it when Marvel, you know, back pre-COVID, when Marvel had those dollar issues, True Believers, I think is what they were called.
Yep.
That issue was one that they made, and I was like, I was so happy to go and pick up that issue again. But yeah, that is one of my favorite individual comics. And G.I. Joe issue 11 is another one of my favorite. That was the issue where they introduced a lot of the second wave characters. So you had Snowjob, Gung-Ho, and you got to see the first glimpse of Destro, but it was only his gauntlets. It takes place in Alaska, somewhere in the snow. It's Alaska or the Arctic. And it was kind of like this chase issue down a oil pipeline. Because Cobra was going to put poison into the pipeline. And yeah, I just thought it was a very well-written issue. And those are, I think those two individual comics stick out to me. Trades, probably maybe the first three Preacher trades I would reread. Mm-hmm. So I think those are some of my favorites.
Very cool. Very cool. I love how he continues to say, folks, I have two. I have two. I have. Okay. Two-Face. All right. Yeah. I get it. You have a scarred, you have a scarred coin. Scarred coin. Now all I can hear in my head is the late, great, amazing Heath Ledger. Would you like to know how I got these scars?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
What a shame.
What a shame, but what a performance. Oh,
yeah.
God.
Oh, yeah.
So we got to ask a few negative questions because there are a lot of negative things in comics, but we try to make these fairly okay. But are there any comics you avoid altogether? You go in the comic shop and you see this, 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 and this, and this, but then you see like three other titles. It's like, I don't want to go anywhere near those.
I think I'm not a big fan of like franchise crossovers. But the funny thing is like I say that, but if I can find like a collection, a trade that's cheap enough, I'll check it out. Like I did enjoy, and I can say I did enjoy like Infestation. Remember when like I think it was Star Trek, Transformers, yep, and like I like when all those came together, and I liked when they brought Mask into the IDW GI Joe. That was kind of fun. And as good as I hear they are, I haven't read the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Batman.
Oh, you need to.
Yeah, I know. I hear it's really good.
No, dude, you need to read those three trades, Volume 1, Volume 2, or hell, just go back and listen to our episodes that we did.
Yeah, I should, because I think I heard you talking also about, what was it, Power Rangers meets Godzilla. That to me sounds kind of fun.
I don't know. Yeah, it sounds kind of fun. I don't know if we're actually going to cover that. You probably heard me talk about that in the Power Rangers TMNT episode, because I think that's when we were like, oh, yeah, by the way, coming up next is blah, blah, blah. Not next on the podcast, but next for the next crossover kind of thing. And for me, I'm not a kaiju. I'm not like Jeremy. I'm not like Mr. Fine over there. I don't do Godzilla. I don't do any of that stuff. I thought it was okay as a kid, whatever, fine. But like for me, Godzilla Begins and Ends in Austin Powers and Goldmember.
Run! It's Godzilla!
It looks like Godzilla, but due to international copyright laws, it's not. still, we should run like it is Godzilla!
Though it isn't.
That line, that quote with the two guys, with the whatever, and I know I'm doing really bad accents, folks. I'm sorry. I will probably put the clip in or something so you can hear what the actual clip is. But, like, seriously, that's where my enjoyment of Godzilla begins and ends, is in Austin Powers and Cold Members. Yeah, generally, I'm not the biggest fan of franchise crossovers, but Batman TMNT was really good. The two TMNT Ghostbusters ones were really good. What else? Transformers Back to the Future was okay. Transformers Terminator was interesting, but it wasn't like anything to write home about. I don't know. It just depends. It depends on who's writing it. It depends on what the story is. It really just depends. And sometimes, sadly, you end up walking away with like, yeah, I could do without having read that, I guess. But, you know.
It's kind of like the junk food to a real meal kind of thing. I think that comics can be a real meal, but I think some of those crossovers are more junk food. Doesn't mean they can't be fun. And, you know, if I can't find them cheap enough, I'll pick them up. But I don't get drawn to that. And sticking with the whole two thing, I guess the other thing that I don't really go after is certain franchises or things that I didn't grow up with or that came out a little too late. Or things like, a good example would be Power Rangers. I didn't really grow up with Power Rangers. I don't really seek that kind of stuff out. But that's, other than that, I'm willing to check out almost anything.
Yeah. And when I say he's way too old, folks, I'm not insulting him. I'm saying it as a fact. If you were 8 years old in 1982, and I was 2 years old in 1982, I was 13 when Power Rangers debuted. You would have been 16, 17?
Yeah.
Somewhere around you were way past the age of being interested. Like, I was still hooked on, you know, after school specials and things like that, going from being 12 to being 13. Oh my God, you're a teenager now. Oh no, the worst thing ever.
You know, and it's funny that age when you're in high school, when you think you're too cool for school, because that led me to have to discover things like the Batman animated series.
Yep.
Things like that later, because I couldn't be bothered.
Yeah.
But now I remember when that started coming out on DVD, I was so excited because I'd always wanted to. I'd come around and really wanted to check it out. And you're a Batman Beyond fan. Batman Beyond was another one. I would have people come out. Oh, you got to check this out. It's so good. Yeah. I'm like, And
certain. OK, the overall series is OK-ish. I will say there's probably out of the 52 episodes that Batman Beyond had, there are maybe 20 that are really, really good.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
The rest are kind of they're okay-ish. Some are down. I will never watch Rats again. Nobody listening to the sound of my voice could ever pay me enough money. Not even $1 billion. Nobody could pay me enough money to watch Rats ever again.
That's funny you bring up that episode because I think in the early days. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Batman Beyond, this was before HBO Max came out, but I think it was on Netflix for a little bit.
It might have been.
One of those services. And when they brought it on, I was like, oh, cool, finally, I can watch this. And the episode where I stopped was Rats.
Was Rats.
So when they brought it back on HBO Plus, HBO Max, I started the episode after that and went through it. But Rats was the one where I was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
For now.
Not even like, and the Rat King is my least favorite TMNT villain guy character, whatever, because I don't do rats. And I'm like Indiana Jones. I don't do rats. I don't do snakes. I don't do any of that. Not even going to happen. Rats. No. Are there any comics in the past or currently that you wish you had not read them?
Oh, man. A little bit of Holy Terror. Frank Miller's Holy Terror wasn't so good. I could have used those minutes back in my life, I guess. But you know, not to get political, and I didn't read the first issue. Somebody just posted like a few pages from it, mm-hmm. and it was this this conservative activist made this comic where Osama bin Laden became president of the United States because liberals wanted to be. I mean, this is this. And I read those two pages that they posted, and this is the worst thing I've ever read. I definitely want those few seconds of my life back.
But
I think other than that, I think I can always get a little something out of what I read.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, over 500 episodes, a decade of doing this thing, I can maybe say one or two things I would never go back and read again. Most of, like, if I had a hankering to go back and read something, I probably would. But half the time I don't, because I read it for the when we do comic reviews, I'm reading it literally the day of the night that we record. So I have the freshest things in my mind, and I'm old, folks, and my brain doesn't work so well. So, yeah, no, I need to have it as close to the recording time as possible so I know what the hell I'm talking about. How large or small is your physical comic book collection?
Well, if you're talking comics, not big. That's one thing that I'm okay with purging is comics. Now, I'm talking comics, not trades. Trades, right. I have a lot.
Maybe. Six rooms full, folks.
Probably.
His whole house. It's not,
yeah. Oh, it's no joke.
No, I know.
I have a lot of trades, and those I plan on keeping. So I don't mind getting rid of comics themselves are hard to store. I think they're heavy.
Yeah.
They just I don't mind purging those and getting those back out into the ecosystem of collectors. So my comic collection itself is small, but my trade paperback collection is huge.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, and honestly, for the most part, the trades are better because you don't have, like, specifically to DC and Marvel, you don't have the monthly advertisements in them. Sometimes you have like cool interstitial pages between each issue, or you have a trade where it'll show the variant covers between each issue. Sometimes the variant covers are at the back. Trade paperbacks or, you know, hardcover trades, whatever, you know, hardcover collections, they are so much better than the single issues as far as collecting them.
Yeah.
Goes and sometimes reading them too, because you're just getting the story. Like, you're not.
Yeah, I agree. I love not only that, but you get a bigger chunk of the story in one thing. I mean, monthly comics are the slowest moving stories out there, because you have to wait a month and you get a tiny sliver of the story. Then you got to wait another month. It's much more rewarding for me to read a bigger chunk of the story at one time. Yeah. So that's what I love about trades too. It's just, you get more of the story and it feels like a more complete experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody is safe, humans, pets, whatever you have in your house, but the house is on fire. What is the one comic book you could never live without ever? What's the one comic you would run in and save?
I think it would be my copy of Absolute Watchmen. I think that's probably the one that I would grab.
Very cool, very cool. What is the most money you spent on a comic or a comic item? Comic item could be a batarang, a Green Lantern ring, or battery, or, you know, a statue or whatever.
You know, not too much. I spent $50 on an omnibus. DC had those villain issues out.
Yep.
It was like they put those all together in an omnibus, and I found that for I think $49.50. I think that's up there with what I spent. I don't really spend a whole lot of money on individual issues, because I got into comics because I actually like the stories. You know, I'm not in it to be a collector and trying to make money.
And again, that's why the comic item part of because you never know. You might go to a convention, you might end up dropping $500 or however much it costs to get a Hot Toys Batmobile or whatever kind of thing.
I mean, I probably spent over $50 on a couple of DC hoodies that or comics hoodies at close count.
Very cool. That counts as an item. So
yeah,
absolutely. Was there, and you've talked about this already a little bit, it's like he kind of read the questions beforehand, folks, but he didn't. was there ever a moment, and I know there have been at least two, that you were just done with comics altogether?
And as much, you know, yes, and no, because I think that even in those times when I would not be collecting, I always kind of stayed in the realm of the culture. You know, like I said, I stopped in 89, but then I was all in on the Batman movie, you know, getting the t-shirts and, you know, loving the soundtrack. And so it didn't quite go away. And then, you know, I mentioned I worked with the music magazine. Well, what got me into music was, now I'm a, as much as I love comics, I love Stephen King just as much. I am a huge Stephen King freak. I love Stephen King. I had a friend come up to me and he said, "Hey, you like Stephen King? I got to make you a copy of this band Anthrax because they have all these songs that are based on Stephen King books." So, well, that's cool. And then I get into Anthrax and then I realize that they have a song about Judge Dredd, which is "I Am the Law." And yep. One of the things, you know, and that so it's like, oh, I'd go and read some Judge Dredd books. And then getting back a few years later than that, then Image came out. So it was never too far from my radar. And when I did end up, moving, you know, to New York, and when I stopped collecting then, I would still every once in a while pop into like Midtown because I wanted to pick up. I'm a huge Why the Last Man, which I guess Brian K. Vaughan is another one of my favorite writers, come to think of it. But I would always go in to pick up the new Why the Last Man trades, the 100 Bullets, a lot of that, the Vertigo stuff. So even though I wasn't collecting as much, I was still kind of, you know, within the, you know, still checking out the culture. But so it always stuck with me. So I never was like, I'm done. But there were just times when, I think I was always, it was always on my radar.
Very cool, very cool. What are you reading right now, and what do you think our listeners should check out?
Well, I mentioned the two things, the run on Nightwing the Radiant Black. I'm just really liking how human it all feels, even though they're these superheroes. That drama, that, you know, being the loser kid who's all their friends are more successful than they are, and then you get all this responsibility, and then this, with her on the Radiant Red side, you have a husband who's kind of a loser, and you gotta do what you gotta do. And that's what I really responded to in those stories, is just how human they felt. So yeah, I'm really liking Radiant Black, really liking the Nightwing, and I am really liking. And I just picked this up yesterday and started reading it. Is Cammy Garcia's Robin book, like her YA Teen Titans books, I just really like. I think they're really good stories. I think they would be. I know we have a Titans TV show, but I think that they would be a good show. And Piccolo's artwork is another one. I love his artwork on that too. So I guess he could be another one of my favorite artists. So I'm really liking that. I've been rereading some. When COVID first started and up until maybe last year, I was getting almost everything that DC put out. Right. And now I'm kind of going back and rereading that as trades or, you know, the collected editions or the issues as they're all piled up instead of just one issue at a time. So I kind of enjoyed the Aquaman series, the Aquaman Rising and Black Manta. And I really like the recent run on Wonder Woman and the Trial of Amazons and the Nubia things and the Wonder Girl. So, mentioned the Jason Aaron run on Thor was good. The Tom King run on Batman I read not too long ago that I really liked. And I really liked Doomsday Clock. I know it seems like I haven't read too much recent stuff, but those are the things that I'm thinking that recently I really responded to. I didn't think that Doomsday Clock was going to be as good as it was, but that had some really great moments.
Yeah, absolutely. Heroes, heroines, anti-heroes and heroines, or villains? What archetypes are your go-to reads?
You know, I want to say villains, but I think that a lot of series, a lot of villain series themselves aren't always as good as if the hero's not there. Mm-hmm. So I think I would go between anti-hero and villain. Mm-hmm. But you got to be careful with the anti-hero thing, because the anti-hero thing has been done so much. It's almost been done to death, and especially recently.
Yeah.
So you got to really do that well.
And sometimes the anti-heroes have real world things going on with them, even though they shouldn't, but it is what it is.
Well, Radiant Red is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
I think that kind of an anti-hero in a way that's done well.
Yeah, no, absolutely she is. Yeah, she is very much so. Do you have and I know you've gotten rid of your comics over time, but did you ever have my parents got rid of my comic story?
I have not, and I am so thankful. My parents always respected that. You know, that in fact, I have comics back in Ohio that were the first like comics I ever bought. So I still have all those. The stuff that I've gotten rid of is a lot of the newer stuff. So I still have some of the stuff that I got in the 80s, you know, when I first started collecting. They never threw it away. My brother-in-law, though, did. I mean, he tells me the stories that he – all these issues that were would have been worth so much money now that he went to summer camp and came back, and his mom had thrown out all of his comics. So he has a story, but thankfully I do not. I dodged that bullet, and I'm so thankful that I did. They really understood. My dad used to always joke. He said most kids, when they got money, they would go and buy candy. He said, you always buy comics. I said, yep.
Absolutely. What is one item from a comic book you'd love to have in the real world?
Do they work or just like a...
Yeah, it's functional.
Because I would almost... The Green Lantern ring would be hard to say no to, because you could do so much with it.
Yeah, and, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it might be cool to have the Batmobile to drive around. But I'd want something that could really have some practical application. So I almost want to lean towards the Green Lantern ring.
Yeah, I think that's what most people lean towards. Yeah, I don't know. For some odd reason, as long as I could duck in time, I'd want a Batarang just because. And then after I threw it like once and it hit me in the face, like, you'll poke your eye out, kid. I'll just mount it on the wall. All right. We are now entering the comic book fantasy fun land. And of course, question 24, you kind of just answered it. If you could own any vehicle featured in a comic, which would it be and why?
I would say the Batmobile or a Fantastic Car or a Quinjet. I don't think I'd go as far as wanting the X-Men's, you know, Blackbird, but having something that could fly might be nice and convenient. The Batmobile. You can't go wrong with the Batmobile.
Nope. Absolutely. If you could live in any comic book world that you wanted, where would you live?
In the world of the Preacher. But if I could get out of it real quick, there was this series that I wanted to come out in 2007 maybe, called Fell, and it was just about I think it was Warren Ellis. It was about this investigator, this detective in this city that was like the worst nightmare, collapsing civilization city ever. Jeez. There were dead babies hung from walls, and it was like just to see that for real for just like a minute and to get and get the hell out, that might be interesting. Scratch that. I think really I would probably go to the Dreaming. I think that seeing that the library with every book that was ever even thought of exists, I think that would be really cool. And it would be cool to meet Cain and Abel and Gold Pumpkinhead, Morpheus. So probably the Dreaming. It's probably where I would go.
Very cool. Very cool. Who would be your top three comic pals to join you and become a quartet?
I would say Wolverine. Maybe Cassidy from Preacher. And maybe Steve Rogers to keep us all on the straight and narrow. Because with those, it'd be easy to get up to some shenanigans.
Yeah, except anytime
maybe
anyone.
Wonder Woman.
Yeah, that's true. Of course, the problem with having Wonder Woman on your team is if you did something to offend her, to do her wrong, she would just throw that lasso of truth around you. So
yeah, that's
couldn't
that's
really
the
lie. Yeah, and then the danger of having Steve Rogers, it's not really a danger of having Captain America around, but the danger of having Steve Rogers around is, holy shit, language.
Yeah, you'd get lectured a lot.
Yeah, you'd get lectured a lot.
Why do you need that fourth whiskey sour?
Because I want it. That's
why. Yeah.
Because I want to enjoy myself. Get your stick out. Get you and your stick out of the mud. Your stick of the mud. If you could date any comics character, which one would it be?
Oh, Kitty Pryde.
Really?
Yeah.
Aren't you a little old for her?
Well, then that was going to be my second thing. I'm not talking age appropriateness here. I'm talking because when you think of comics, you think of most people in their early 20s. So I'm going to say, okay. I was still. Because Kitty Pryde was the first nonfiction character that I ever had a crush on.
Okay.
So it was just something about her back in the day that I really liked that never has gone away. But, I mean, I would agree. I mean, if I was going age appropriate, God, I mean, there's not too many. Too many superheroes, female superheroes in their 40s, so it'd be hard.
Oh, God. Yeah, for me, I guess it was, I don't know, she's a little older than me now anyway, but I fell in love with because I was always a cartoon kid, not a comics kid, so in order to get me into comics, I had to hear that sweet, sexy Jennifer Hale as Black Cat in Spider-Man the Animated. Oh, I'd do anything for that one. Anything
for
that
voice.
Yeah,
she'd be up there too. Mary Jane. Yeah. And Magic from the New Mutants. She'd be up there. Yeah, definitely. I can definitely see the Black Cat thing for sure. I'm with you on that one.
Yep. What is the holy grail of comic book artifacts? Examples could be Batarang, Matrix of Leadership, Kryptonite, Green Lantern Ring, etc., etc.
I can cuss on this. I can swear on this podcast, right? Because I'm super liberal, but I would still love Jesse Custer's Fuck Communism Zippo. and I think they actually make it. I think they have editions of the Zippo, that they have made. So I should look to see if I can find one. But I always got a kick out of that.
That would be cool. That's fun. That's interesting. All right, we are now exiting the comic book fantasy fun land. If you could create any comic storyline, what would you want to create, and what characters would you want to create it with?
I think it would be cool for a civil war in the DC world, just to see how that may work. And I think that you would have to have on opposite sides. You would have to, of course, have Batman and Superman instead of Captain America and Iron Man.
Yeah.
But I think that might be fun. So are you saying like in the real world having a storyline come true, or one that I would have wanted to have?
Well, yeah, basically DC, Marvel, whoever gives you the keys to the kingdom and tells you that money is no object, what story would you create?
Yeah, see that would be a fun one. A DC Civil War. I think I would like to really, and I pardon if I'm contradicting myself here, but I would love to see a Marvel DC crossover, all right, where it has real impact on both of the universes moving forward. So it's not just like a throwaway. But it really has an impact. And it seems like they've been kind of hinting at something like that for a little while now. I still have my theory that that's somehow planned. But with everything that's going on at DC, that's kind of tricky to say. But, if I had the Kings of the Kingdom, I think I would do that.
Yeah, I miss – I have it. It's in – It's in my closet currently because I don't have my bookshelves set up. But I finally was able to reacquire a couple of years ago the classic 90s DC versus Marvel, Marvel versus DC trade. I got that off of Amazon for like $100. God.
Wow.
But those four issues in the 90s, I remember reading that. That was big. First time ever that those two, because that was with, I think it was with the Beyonder or somebody like the Beyonder, bringing the two universes together to stop a common foe or whatever the hell it was. But we're going to eventually cover that on this podcast at some point. That'd I don't know cool. when yeah. it's going to be, yeah. but.
Yeah.
But yeah, like a modern day. My thing with teaming DC and Marvel, like if you team the heroes up from each universe, it's like, okay, Batman, Iron Man, I kind of get that. But who would Superman and Captain America? I don't understand the comparison between Soup and Cap. I never have.
Yeah, I think it's just because they're both kind of like
Boy Scouts.
Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
Really. And I'm not interested in, I wouldn't even be, you know, if I was going to do that story, I wouldn't be interested in like who's fighting who in Marvel and DC. Yeah. I would be more like them teaming up.
Yeah. Well, and, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Like you would have,
But there's always what would happen if Superman fought Thor. I don't care about that. I just want I want a good story where they have to team up. But
yeah, you want to find out what happened between Superman and Thor. Or, well, no, I was going to say Marvel versus Capcom, but that's not a thing. Or it is a thing, but Marvel versus DC video game is not a thing. Oh, that would be interesting, though. Have a video game with the two. That would be fun.
Yeah, you do an Injustice.
Yep.
Would be really cool. Yeah, that would be fun. I think that's almost like that's the kind of the medium where those kind of crossovers really work is in video games.
Yeah.
Like the it's in Marvel versus Capcom, Mortal Kombat versus DC, that kind of stuff. Those kind of crossovers are a lot of fun.
Right. That's the one that it was Mortal Kombat versus DC. Yeah, that's right. I remember that now. I remember people were like, "Oh, I'm gonna play as Superman. Well, I'm gonna play as Scorpion. Get over here."
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Final question. What is the one piece of advice you would give the comics fandom?
Give things a chance. Don't write them off before you had a chance to at least check them out. You know, whether it comes to a creative team being announced or somebody playing a character in a movie, don't be so quick to write it off.
Yeah.
That's a big thing because you're gonna be missing out on a lot of good things. I think, you know, Solo is a movie that had its problems, but it wasn't as bad as it got made out to be. It did not deserve to do so bad at the box office, and that kind of really messed up the Star Wars franchise. So stop with the toxic fandom. That would be the thing. To really give things a chance, and give things a chance to beyond like one issue. You know, to try to have patience and stick around and let things get better. You know, I think with today you have the attention spans are so narrow. Thanks to things like TikTok and, and Reels and Facebook and things like that. I think that you could really miss out if you don't give things a longer chance too.
I had been trying to over the last couple of years, I'd say over the last 3 years or so. Back in 2012, we got a chance to chat with Kevin Conroy, and over the last, somewhere from 2017 to 2021 or so, I've been trying to get him back on the show for a new interview. And one of the things, because I usually end up having guests do promos for us and stuff like that, and sometimes I'll have them say various lines, and you know, you're saying this thing about TikTok, and all I hear in my head is Kevin Conroy, "Get off my lawn!"
Yeah.
Oh, I so wanted him to record that. But
oh, man. Yeah. What a loss.
Yes, very much. One of the great losses of our time.
Yeah.
So. All right, we are going to go to a quick break. You're going to hear some ads and some other stuff, and we'll come back with Brad to close the show out right after this.
Hello, geeks and geekettes! Looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of topics? Then check out Altered Geek Unleashed, where we discuss our thoughts on this week's geeky news, tech, gaming, television shows, movies, cartoons, comics, and more. So, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks. Every Friday on the GeekCast Radio Network.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series where we review noted directors' movies film by film. Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or geekcastradio.com.
Hey, welcome to the Last Comic Shop Podcast!
A comic book podcast that actually talks about comics.
Yep, each week we open the shop up and read and discuss a comic.
Sometimes we pair that up with comic book movies or TV shows.
Or not. Lots of times it's just comic books and sound effects.
Oh yes, definitely lots of sound effects.
So tune in on all the major podcasting platforms to The Last Comic Shop Podcast, or check out our library of evergreen shows at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com.
Hi everyone, I'm here to tell you about the DC Comics News Podcast, here every week to talk everything DC, movies, TV, comics, and everything in between. But don't just take my word for it, here are a couple of our sponsors. Listen to the DC Comics News Podcast. It's audio justice.
No. It's audio chaos. These wackos are crazier than I am.
Well, maybe you're both right. Regardless, you can catch us on every kind of podcast platform. Apple Podcasts.
Google Play.
Spotify.
Stitcher.
And everywhere you find great podcasts. So, can I go now?
Let him go. He did everything you asked.
No.
It's true, Batsy. I know everything. And kind of like the kid who peeks at his Christmas presents, I must admit, it's sadly anticlimactic.
All right, we are back here inside the Pullbag, episode 515, and... Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with Brad Filicki, the man of the ultimate either-or question on Facebook.
Yeah,
talk about that because sometimes choices I'm like, meh.
I got to say though, you answer most of them. I respect. You know what's funny about that is, you know, I just throw those out there, and it's funny to me the ones that actually get traction and people respond to. Some people just ignore all of them. Some that I think people would ignore get like 20 answers. So it's that's part of the fun.
Exactly. All right. So you've got DC Comics News and whatever else you want to promote. So go ahead and start promoting.
Yeah, you check out DCComicsNews.com. I'm doing news stories, a little writing for Merc with the Movie Blog, which is our editor Josh's website, on the DC Comics News podcast, and I'm also on the Harley Quinn Mad Love podcast, which is part of the DC Comics News podcast network. We've fallen behind, but we'll get back up on that Harley Quinn podcast at some point. And you can follow me on Twitter at FlickyB1. I'll spell that out. FILICKYB and the number one. And I don't know if it's kosher to promote my Facebook page, but you can check me out on Facebook, just Brad Flicky. I do a lot of either or questions, my question of the day. and sometimes I'm on the Comics in Motion podcast. I've guested on a few of those podcasts as well. So I'm out there.
Very cool. Very cool. Any final thoughts, any final words you want to give to our audience before I run through the closing?
I'm just going to say what we say at the DC Comics News podcast, and that's to read more comics. Keep the medium alive. We wouldn't have all these huge movies if we didn't have the source material. You're going to find that so much of these movies that you love is based on source material. So we still need those comics to generate that source material for these movies. So please go out there, read and discover. It's it's more varied than you realize and more complex than you realize. So definitely read more comics.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's definitely more complex than we realize, considering Warner Brothers had to put a gun to DC, which is going to be a good thing, I think, because it's been abysmal up till now.
Yeah. Man, the canceling of the Batgirl movie almost broke my spirit.
I mean,
that was just the absolute worst.
I'm like, what? You're going to cancel the good movie and then continue on with a movie that has a criminal for a star?
Exactly. Like, exactly. What? Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think the Flash trailer looked amazing, but that's a risk. That is a risk. And you had a perfect introduction to Michael Keaton's Batman again through the Batgirl movie. The whole thing is just, and for a tax write-off, it's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You could have just replaced the one person as, because they don't want to be known as whatever, but you could have just replaced them with the better Flash actor in Grant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have been there for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know about this Miller. I don't want to drink that beer. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for joining us here inside the Pullback. If you'd like to get in contact with us, leave feedback for the show. There are several ways to do so. Visit the website geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. Send us email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. Here are all the ways you can listen to us nowadays: Apple, Google Podcasts, leave us reviews, please, Spotify, and any other podcatching client you choose to use. You can follow us on Twitter @GeekCastRadio for the network, @ThePullback for the show. I am @TFG1Mike. Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork and also check out The Pullback over there as well. Join us next time, and as we'll be discussing something. I have something written down, but I don't know if I'm going to get it recorded in time, because as of this recording, I have 4 podcasts I need to edit still. So I got 512, 513, 514, and now this one. So, yay. Lots of work for me, folks. Sometimes I wonder, but that man won't quit as long as he can still draw a breath. None of my teammates will. For now, I am TF2 and Mike with
Brad Flicky.
As always, make your great escape in the comics, and we will catch you next time.
You've just heard the latest episode of The Pullback, the GCRN's first comic review and discussion podcast. There are several ways to get in touch with us and leave feedback for the show. You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on the episode and all of our different podcasts. You can rate and leave a review for the show on iTunes. Be sure to leave us feedback. Become a fan of us on Facebook, facebook.com/ThePullback. Send us an email, feedback@geekcastradio.com. Follow us on Twitter @ThePullback and @GeekCastRadio. So until next time, make your great escape into comics and unleash the geek in you.
I'm not hearing this.